There we go. Okay, we're streaming, we're recording. Everybody's so civilized this morning. What's up with that?
It happens when you're prepared for class.
Did we have more people show up? I see James in the back. So is it 22, everybody here?
22, except the third. Two kids, you and
one here that's here missing.
Okay.
They don't count.
So we got 22 plus two children, plus me, plus Richard. So that's like 45 people showed up today. There's at least that many personalities in the room. Well, we'll go ahead and get started. I am Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions, and this is the San Carlos Computer Club. And are there any new faces? I don't see any new faces. Oh, hi. I'm Scott. What's your name?
I'm Phil.
Hi, Phil. Welcome.
Thank you.
As I've told people in the past, if you come and sit at our table, you are now a member of our club. So, welcome.
He paid 10 pesos.
Yeah? Well, excellent. That's all. And just a reminder, the 10 pesos goes to none of us. It goes to Tequilas for giving us the space and good table service and having ample Wi-Fi for us all to use. And so it's just an appreciation for, we've always collected an appreciation for our host. And so that's where the 10 pesos goes when you come to meet with us. What was that, Robin?
Our hostess.
Our hostess too, that's right. Because Esmeralda did a great job of taking care of us. She's not even here to get the applause. She's going to have to look at it in YouTube. So, and Phil, for your benefit, I'll just explain. I record this for posterity, and I publish it at the same time, so you can find it on a YouTube channel, or you can find it on our website, or you can find it in iTunes as a podcast. You can subscribe to it and listen to it later, or you can listen to it live from our website. So we do this from about 9:15 to 10:15-ish. I say that because sometimes we can't leave. Sometimes we're so hot in debate that we can't get up from the table. Except to pee.
Thank you for identifying that.
I know you're not leaving because of me. But welcome, welcome. And as always, I've brought some topics, but I've also brought some children. Down here at the end of the table, hey, you two, I'm talking to you. Stand up real quick so everybody can meet you. The girl in the cat ears is my teenage daughter, Emily. And the one that's refusing to stand up is my 11-year-old, Bibiana.
Yay! Excited to be here.
Yeah, they're happy and excited to be here.
Look how little they used to be.
You remember?
Yeah.
Because I do, too.
That's what happens with kids.
Well, they are off from school. They've been off from school. They've had this enormous weekend. They got Friday off, and they got Monday and Tuesday off, all for Carnival.
Wow.
So they've decided to come hang out with us, and they've got tech. Yes, Emily.
Friday was for Conteco Tecnico.
Okay, so they conveniently made Friday a in-service day, so they ended up with us.
And then they get off for Semana Santa again.
Yeah, they get 2 weeks off for Semana Santa.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Jim.
That's spring break.
To give to the class.
Bibiana, could you stand up for a second? Stand up, please. Everybody wants to put a face to a name, so stand up one more time. This is the girl that's given us the last two or three computer tips. So thank you very much, Vivi. Everybody appreciates it. Did you hear that? You're going to have to substitute for me when I can't make it.
It's really hard. I don't know how you do this. No, I'm happy to be involved.
BB is a master at using a tablet and a phone at the same time.
Watch me!
She's an animator. She uses her tablet as an animation studio, and she publishes cartoons on a file sharing or a animation. Describe it. Describe Sketch.
Sketch is not for animations, first of all, Poppy.
Yeah.
It's for drawing.
All right, is that as deep as you're going to get into it, you sassy lass? Is that all you're going to get into?
I'm right now getting notifications by it.
Yeah?
My tablet last time crashed.
It's kind of like a Facebook for drawing. she's got a social network of people that appreciate cartoon drawing. It's pretty advanced drawing sometimes, right?
You want me to show you an example?
Yeah.
Sure. Explore where you can find, in popular, where you can find best out of best drawing. And this is one of them.
Watch the hold it up to a camera real quick too, so we can get it on video. Just right there. That was way too quick. Say that again. No, this is an example of the kind of art that gets passed around on this site called Sketch, and it's an app that she uses in her tablet. And she's able to publish it, and then everybody's able to comment on it and pass it around and like it.
That for the art, and then it'll be.
Watch the cable.
You rap.
BB's doing a lot of cartoon art. And then Emily is, what are you into? You're doing Arduinos right now, aren't you? So, Arduino is a programmable controller. Do you want to say a few things about Arduinos?
Well, yeah, Arduino's a programmable...
Stand up.
Right. Okay. Arduino is, like, a programmable controller, like you said. You can make, like whatchamacallit? Brick. Hold on. You can make, like, circuits with it. Right now, we're just trying to turn on LEDs and stuff. But, like, you can make cool stuff with it. Like, maybe robots. I don't know.
So what she's trying to explain, LED, they call it LED, it's LED lights. And so they've had a number of projects now where they're turning on lights based on sensory information. And so what an Arduino is, it's a controller, and what that does is you can receive information and you can send information out from it. And you can write these very simplistic programs that are based in logic, so that you can take in data and you can use that to make decisions. And so, what was your last project that you were making? What was the result? What was supposed to happen?
We're doing something cool in my class where we got a scratch for Arduino, and it helped us program Arduino easier. So the last thing we did was that we made the two connections for LEDs that they could both turn on, and we programmed for them to go on with sounds.
With sounds.
Yeah.
So what they wrote was a program that would listen through a microphone sensor if there's any sounds in the room, and it would turn on LED lights when it heard sounds. So you could imagine it's like a jumping LEDs. Is that right? They're brightening and softening, brightening and softening, depending on the sounds that are being heard by the device.
Where do you girls go to school?
Instituto Trevino.
Where?
Instituto Trevino in Guaymas.
Right there
you
at the...
slower, I mean.
Yeah, just say it slower.
And
louder, and with more emphasis. She's got to do a presentation later this week too, so she's getting some coaching right now.
So where is this school?
Can you tell her?
It's around Guaymas.
It's right after the turnoff for Miramar. Right after the.
You mean Colegio Americana?
No, before that, after the movie theaters. Instituto Cervino.
Okay. After the movie theater.
The after Skaya? The movie theater.
Right.
So by the what?
Vizcaya.
Vizcaya. Yeah, it's down to the left.
It's actually, if you were going to the movie theater, it's before the movie theater.
By the funeral?
If you're taking the Dolphinarium Road, yeah.
By the funeral home?
I'm not sure where a funeral home is.
It's in that island in between the two roads.
Yeah, right across from that fish store for fish
restaurant. Oh, I know where it is. Okay.
Okay.
I know where it is.
Good.
I
know. Yeah, you can put Instituto Cervino in your Google Maps. It'll show you right where it is.
So this language is much easier than Cobalt or
Fortran. Yes. Yeah, it's much easier, but it is a structured, object-oriented programming language.
All right.
What doesn't need to happen is it doesn't need to be compiled into binary before it's used. And so when you look at the code that they've written, somebody that's been trained in logic, it's very straightforward to understand what's happening with the code. It makes a lot of sense. It almost looks, if you've ever coded, it looks like pseudocode. It looks like the idea of code, but it is actual code.
Blocks are color-coded, makes everything so much easier.
Well, and then that's the other thing, is they've been using a programming language that was developed by MIT for teaching coding called Scratch. And Scratch is a visually oriented coding language. So they've got things like puzzle pieces, and each puzzle piece represents a certain kind of logic block, and then you piece them together and then fill in. It's kind of like a template of code, and you fill in those things that are variable.
So people who are visually oriented do really, really well with this.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Emily actually had experience with this coding language 4 years ago. I had introduced her to it. So when she got into this class this year, she was amazed at how much farther along she was than she thought she was going to be.
Yeah. I was carrying my team.
She's carrying her team.
Anything.
Have you become the go-to person when people don't know what's going on?
No.
they've got
their own stuff to do. They can ask a teacher. They don't know I'm good at this.
They don't need to know. Only your team needs to know. Yeah, Bob.
Is this normal programming in all schools, or is this a special school?
I think that you should consider this normal nowadays.
Really?
I think we're really working hard to develop curriculum that's all about problem solving and critical thinking, because we don't know what's happening next. And so we're encouraging this in our school districts and our schools. And so this is new to her, but the idea of doing this in the school isn't new.
Now, do you speak Spanish in the school or English?
Both.
Wow. It's a bicultural school. Yeah, and so they have... You and Bibi do it differently, right?
Nani. Bibi has two classes. She has English class and Spanish class, and she switches between them, and there's math and history and stuff in between those, like inside of those classes.
But is it like a day in English, a day in Spanish, or half day in English, half day in Spanish?
Bibi, how is it now? Because it's constantly changing. It's a day.
So she does a day in Spanish and a day in English.
And in those classes, there's classes like math, history, geography.
The big joke used to be that she's not doing so well in Spanish. It's like, well, every class is in Spanish except for English. And she knows English. Of course, that's going to be one of her best classes.
Do you guys speak Spanish at home or English?
We rotate. I don't speak Spanish. Mom speaks Spanish. That's always been the rule. Ever since they were born, the rule was mom would speak Spanish and dad would speak English.
That's the rule? When did that become a rule?
Before you knew about rules, that became a rule.
The biggest problem is her mom has no patience for bad Spanish. She'd much rather speak English than deal with bad Spanish. Consequently, Yuya is very good at English and my Spanish is atrocious.
You're getting better.
Thank you. Thumbs up from my kids on the Spanish. We should. You guys got anything else you want to add to Computer Club?
No.
Just happy to be here.
Wear your seatbelts.
Wear your seatbelts. My dad's gonna blast off. Wear your seatbelts.
I'm sorry. What was that? It seems like you're like a shy kid who has to go in front.
Bibi.
Speak. You're like. Wear your seatbelts, everyone.
Am I
wrong? Am I correct? No, you're correct.
Guys, we're going to move on with topics, okay?
All right.
Unless you have a topic. Go ahead.
I was going to say, for us old-timers, most of us remember the executable programming languages. You compiled them and ran it.
That's right.
These days, a lot of them are interpretive, so they're dynamic of what they do next. There used to be a language called Plan that was a combination of the two. So you built a list of programs that you were going to execute, but you're still on the current one. But then you could modify the list as you were going, So there are kind of a combination of the compiled and the interpretive type languages, and I think you still see some of that.
Kind of a self-generating code.
Yeah. The dynamic one was very, very interesting. It was used a lot more in scientific type things, where you say, well, I know I need to do this, but then, oh, I just suddenly saw a result, so I'm going to change what I just learned and do something in between what I know I have to do in the future.
Yeah, I think a lot of that's kind of been given up for the object-oriented programming languages.
Some of that, too.
Yeah.
You know, where you can change what you're going to do next.
WordPress was easy to use.
I find this stuff fascinating, but we need to concentrate on topics everybody finds fascinating. So, what has been brought? Has anybody brought anything? Mike, you got something back there?
I heard something the other day about Telmex or Telcel having a new program where you can get your Wi-Fi wirelessly from their tower.
Okay.
Anybody else hear about that?
Telcel.
Yeah, no, they've been doing that for a while. Yeah. Is there some new plan?
$400 a month or something like that.
Yeah.
And how's it work?
What is it?
Anybody know?
Well,
wireless.
Wireless
high five.
San Carlos.
Yeah.
That's what he's on.
He's on Telcel. Do you know how many gigs he gets for that price?
I don't know what he pays. I think he's getting 10. Now, that's up from his 3.5.
Or one.
For his phone.
that he used to get.
Oh, for Telmex. The same thing? Oh,
no,
from Telmex. Oh wait, no. We're talking about the bandwidth cap on, not the speed. I'm sure he's getting good speed, especially with LTE.
On Telcel.
Yeah.
He was getting 1.5.
On Telmex.
On Telmex.
Yeah, but on Telcel he's getting 10.
So you use the Telmex or the Telcel modem?
But there still is a limit on how much data you can use, right?
I believe so.
Yes.
Yeah. And so that's what would be interesting to see is what the limit is. Richard, you just recently bought some SIM cards. How much did it cost you for data?
6 point. Well, the largest package they sold was 6.5 gigabytes, and that was 500 pesos.
Yeah.
But they were running a 2-for-1 sale, so actually the 500 pesos would have gotten you 13.
13 gigs for 500. How do you identify a 2-for-1 sale? Did you do that at OXO or at the Telcel office?
No, I did all those inquiries at the real office.
At the real
office. I don't think that I would buy the data through an OXO. I'd just be too afraid of a
contract. No, actually, I bought data at a Telcel authorized in Wayabitos because I ran out.
Yeah.
And I got...
You got the 2-for-1?
The 13,000.
The 13 gigs for 500 pesos?
Right.
Yeah, they express it as 13,000.
Yeah, and on your phone, on your bill, if you go in there, they express it as 13,000.
You know, what I'd like to add to this topic, something Richard turned me on to I didn't realize, is there is a Telcel app for your phone, Mi Telcel.
Yeah.
And if you guys have talked about it before, I'm sorry I didn't pay attention to it. But that's if you're on Mexican servers with Telcel, definitely download that app.
Absolutely.
Because it will show you definitively where you are on your data plan, how much you owe, what your billing is. All of that will come through. And being authorized is very easy. You have a Telcel phone number, so they just send you an authorization code to your messenger, and you stick that in you're authorized, and you have all that right in the palm of your hand.
Does anybody do this from when they're up north?
And
keep their then you can pay from up there using your credit card, I guess.
Yeah. They've got online payment methods.
But they do charge you, I think, a little service charge if you pay from the U.S.
No, if you put enough. If you do 100, well, this is Telmex. But if you put $100 on, they don't charge you a service fee.
I really don't know my phone gets paid here locally, but I do know people are paying for things through their credit card online, regardless of where they are on the internet. So there might be a service fee associated with it, but it's doable.
Here's another question: If when we buy 28 days at a time from OXO, mm-hmm. and then
It seemed to close out early because we can't understand the Spanish that they're telling us, but we weren't getting very good service, and it was only 21 days. Now, could we have used too much data?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that?
Yeah, you could have used up your data, and they would dial you down to... You can barely read email speeds.
No, I think the problem that the gentleman is referring to, this is a little game that Telcel plays. Let's say I have something for 21 days. And I want to be proactive, as they like to say, and I say 3 days before, oh, I'll buy another 21 days. It resets the counter at the moment that I bought it, so I've lost my 3 days.
Oh, thank you, Richard. That is a much better explanation of what could be going on.
Yeah.
Because you're recalculated at that new date of purchase.
Yeah, so you can't buy it early.
Correct. Never buy it early.
Well,
that's the message.
It's cumulative, though, isn't it?
No.
You don't lose whatever data you have left, do you?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think you do. I think it's cumulative.
I was just talking about a term but, of the thing. Yeah, the data thing is a little fuzzy.
Sir, are you a Permanente?
No.
Or temporal?
No.
I never do that. No, I want the computer. I use the computer.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mike.
So you're going through data because you set your phone up as your hotspot. Is that it?
Well, data, anytime you check Facebook on your phone, you're using data. I mean,
okay.
They don't. There's a lot of plans out there where they don't charge you for that because it's Facebook, not because it's some kind of special data. Facebook, WhatsApp, Twitter, these are very common things for them to just give away for free with your plan. Okay. But all of those represent using data.
So they're going to make a choice, and this is 40 because you have some amount of data.
Depends on what you're doing. You wouldn't want
to. Right?
Yeah, you wouldn't want to stream 4K video for very long.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think on the home thing you get that. It's only on your phone. You get the 1,000 megabytes Facebook.
Are you saying that when you get the, like you're saying George is using one? You don't think
that
there's.
You
don't think there's
a
limit?
Oh yeah, no, I'm talking about. You know, on your phone, when you have an
mm-hmm.
account with them, you get the 1,000 megabytes.
Right,
you get
right.
The 1,000 tells...
the bandwidth cap.
The 1,000 Facebook, the 1,000 WhatsApp, the 1,000... But that doesn't count in Messenger.
I hear what you're saying, Linda. Yeah, I had just described of those apps as being free. They're free on your phone.
Yeah, but I don't think they're free on the home thing. That's a whole different program.
Yeah, no, there's a good chance that you're right, is that they're not making the distinction on that kind of data from the... And at the same time, they could. And actually, there isn't a reason they couldn't sell it like that.
But I don't think they do.
They probably don't.
You have to buy your own modem from them. They don't give you the modem.
What is the app?
You were talking about
just the modem.
Mi Telcel. M-I Telcel.
You mentioned 4K.
Yeah, 4K.
That takes... 25.
Fair problems? Megabits a second? That's what you're thinking? Yeah. It could be that to keep up with it, that seems like a lot of bandwidth to need. But I use it as an example of how quickly you could run through your data cap on your phone if you're looking at 4K. One of the things that you could do real quickly, you could set your phone up as a hotspot and then hook a dozen computers to it very quickly. You would use up all your data.
Well, for instance, I have an IPTV.
Mm-hmm.
That uses data.
Yes.
So I wouldn't want to go on them. I'd be out of data.
Right.
In no time.
Well, and what's interesting is we've had experience. I was sorting this out with Richard because he is doing this thing in Mazatlan, and we're discussing data usage, and I have been streaming the computer club, and we were having problems last year with bandwidth, and so I got in the habit of switching over to my phone. And I would use up my data very quickly, and it didn't make sense to me until I installed this Mi Telcel, and I've been wrong all along. I have 3 gigs of data. I don't have 8 gigs of data. So that's how it gets used up so quickly.
It gets used up really fast.
Yeah.
When I went to Wayabitos, I had it used up within, I had it used up within 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I had to go buy more.
Now, what's nice about having a contract or one of these phones in the States is that now you get to take your data with you. So there isn't additional fees associated with using any of these apps on your phone while you're in the States. And I can testify that using your phone as a hotspot also works
in the States.
And it doesn't count any different than the data you're using out of your phone. There's no distinction. It did not work for me in Alaska. And I think it has something to do with their networks. And
how did it not work?
It didn't work. I wasn't able to hook anything to it. I was able to hook things to it, but I wasn't able I wasn't able to use the internet. I was able to connect to the hotspot, but I wasn't able to go out onto the network.
But you're saying that if I turn my phone or whatever into a hotspot, that I'm not going to use data anymore?
No, you will use data. You absolutely use data. What I was saying is that it will be the same price for data.
Okay.
Yeah, if you hook your computer up to it. And this is a frustrating thing, too. Windows 10 has actually done a good job of adding a feature in their networks so that you can say this is a metered connection. So you can use your hotspot on your laptop, and Windows 10 isn't trying to download its updates. Or even better, Windows 10 has a peer-to-peer update function built into it. So when you're on the internet by default, you've elected to make your computer one of the nodes that shares updates with other computers on the network. If you don't distinguish your hotspot as a metered connection, your computer could be sharing updates with other computers on the internet through your cell phone, using up your data.
Well, I bought the stick down at Telcel.
Yeah.
They have a Huawei stick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I bought the Huawei stick. And
it's a USB?
The USB stick, and then all you have to do, you can just buy gigabytes.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with that is, that I did realize, is if you don't go to the Telmex and buy the money, buy the gigabytes from them, and you buy it from someone else, then you've got to call in.
Mm.
And report and where you bought it and blah blah blah.
And add
so
it
I
to
bought
your
the stick. It was $20 for this Huawei stick, and then I put some gigabytes into it. And you could, but it turns out you can only use it on your laptop.
I was going to say I don't think I would. If it's $20, I would go with the hotspot because those are around $40 to $60.
I tried to plug it into my IPTV.
Oh, that's interesting.
Stick, and
yeah,
it didn't work.
Yeah.
I couldn't get the TV.
Right, because you'd need a USB driver. You'd actually need special kind of software to use that as your bridge. Yeah.
Even though my box, TV box, has two USBs.
Right, it's not intended for that.
But I plugged in and I thought, okay, I can plug this in and
No, your IPTV USB would be looking at the most for storage, maybe a keyboard and mouse, but it wouldn't look for that kind of device. And so the stick is really limiting. I mean, it's like adding a Wi-Fi adapter to your computer, and then you have to have software that supports that Wi-Fi adapter. Whereas if you get the hotspot, anything that supports Wi-Fi is able to connect to it. So your phones, your tablets, your laptops, everything can connect to it. And that's just
how do you do the hotspot?
It's just a different device. Yeah, it's a device.
When you use your phone for it.
Well, yeah, but
you can't project Netflix onto your laptop or your TV with your phone. It won't do it. I got the sound, and then I went online looking for it.
Yeah, but Linda, that's a different thing. We're talking about internet connectivity through the cell phone network, and you described doing it with a stick, and I'm describing doing it with a hotspot. When one of those devices that is about the size of a phone, but it's dedicated to providing you with internet through the cell network, and it creates a hotspot that you can connect all your devices to.
You just don't use your phone as the hotspot?
Right, this would be a separate hotspot plan. Yeah. That's right.
Plan.
Yeah.
From Telmex?
From Telcel. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And they've got the equipment in the office, and they've got a specific... And I assume that's what you guys are talking about when you're talking about George's connection.
He's got a
Telcel home...
Yeah.
It's Telcel home modem.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're talking about.
Oh.
That's a hotspot.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so what else have we got going on? Is there any other topics that we should bring up?
If you have a cell phone down here, how do you keep advertisers from calling you? Is there any way to block them?
Yeah, yeah. The most recent cell phones make it very easy to block calls.
Well, our friend just had bought one down here, and he keeps getting these advertisements, and he would like to know how to block them because they do take up his minutes.
Yeah, you know, if it's an Android, I'm just realizing I don't even have my phone here. I must have left it in the car.
Well,
it's not
awesome.
The same number.
Yeah, but in Android, you're going to have to look. In my experience, what you do is you look at the calls that are coming in, and then look at the info about that call. At that point, you may need to turn it into a contact. But typically in that list of information, there's a block caller button that you would hit, and it gets added to a blacklist. And so that number will no longer come in.
But they'll just call with the next...
times. They'll call with the next iteration of numbers.
But it does ring. Mine rings four times, which is pretty annoying.
Yeah, it does ring.
Say that again. Oh, you must be able
blocked.
To...
So if I block this call,
yes.
And they call back, it'll ring like four times, and then it'll click off.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, my blocked call list, they do nothing.
This is annoying on my...
That's an iPhone. I have a Huawei, and the software that was provided by the Huawei puts a notification on the screen saying blocked caller. And it makes no ringing. It makes no sound. It just puts a notification call was blocked. I'm sorry, Gary, what were you saying right there?
No, I was just asking Judy whether... if it continued to do that with that same number,
yes.
Or it just did it once.
No.
She said it continues.
It continues to do that? Chester, did you want to add to that?
No, I just wanted to confirm that you said you go to the information on that call.
On that particular call.
Yeah.
You can block it.
Yeah.
Someone like that. Some of the Samsungs, though, you have to go down to the
block. I have a Samsung.
Well, and I know I've had experience, I can't tell you the name brand, but I've had phones in my hand that I wasn't able to block the call unless I saved it as a contact to begin with. Which in some respects that's kind of nice, like I was getting inundated with calls from Telcel, which I find is extremely annoying, poor business practice. I'm already their customer, stop calling me to try and sell me stuff. But I put a contact in for like junk mail, and every time they called me with a new number, I would save that under the same contact. And so by default, it would be blocked because that contact is blocked. And so then I had a number of numbers that were all associated with just one contact, and they continue every time a new call would come in, be like, oh, that's another one to block, and I just save it under that contact.
Is there a way to block a range of numbers?
Somehow I did, and I can't remember how I did it.
Push the off button.
I think that's a great question. I've never heard of such a thing, but you'd think there'd be an app out there. Somebody would have come up with that. If not for iPhone, you'd think on Android at least.
When I first got my iPhone, I was getting those calls all the time, and if I didn't recognize the number, I just didn't answer.
Right.
But it's annoying. Somehow I blocked them. I don't get them anymore, and I don't remember what I did.
Well, I think that'd be a great lookup topic. I'm going to make a note about it right now. It's blocking ranges of numbers. And a good example, I mean, you may have trouble wrapping your head around why this is important, but you could be somebody that only does business in Mexico. So any calls from Russia or any other country, you wouldn't want to receive in the first place. So why not be able to block down your phone to country codes 52 and country codes 1 and everything else just block?
It seems like also my Android built-in block thing seems to have a limit of 200. I've got an app that'll do more than that.
Oh, you're saying that the default app from your phone
fills up the number of blocked calls.
Ah.
And it's 200 in my case. I don't know if that's universal.
Can I go back to computers? I have a question about blocking.
Okay.
And that is, does anybody block stuff and it still comes up?
You're talking about like junk mail.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, all the time. We all have that problem.
You all have that problem.
Yeah, because the junk mailers are always looking for a way to get around the blocking filters. And so when you block something, it may be very successful for a while, but if they're persistent, if that's the way they're making their money is sending out junk mail, eventually they'll find a way around that filter, and you'll have another system to block. He's talking about spam. Yeah,
but think of how much, if you go into your spam and then you see all kinds of stuff from people that you really want to get from, goes into the spam.
So you can move them. You can move those. You
what about the right. emails yeah. that you get? And there's an article that you want to, you know, read about, and so you go out on the internet, and then they always come up with, you know, do you want to subscribe? They always have that little block. How do you block that block? Because every time you have to turn it off. But is there a way to block it from coming up in the first place?
That's how they're making their money.
Yeah, I got to tell you, we are not going to solve this spam junk mail problem today. This is a constant dynamic problem. It is changing every day.
What's really good is Outlook.
Outlook?
Microsoft Outlook. I tried Thunderbird, went through a list of email programs. Microsoft Outlook is the best, in my opinion. And I don't get any more junk mail. It all goes into spam. And I used to check it and put not junk on the ones that I wanted to get. Now I just delete, empty the spam, and that's it.
I don't even look at the spam. Yeah. I let Microsoft deal with it.
Yeah, well, Outlook also allows you to define rules.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, I think there is a distinction, though, because I don't think you have rules on Outlook.com. You do have it on Outlook that comes with Office.
No, I'm talking about Outlook app.
The app
on your phone or in Windows if you install Office or get Outlook.
Do you have rules on the Outlook app? I don't think you do. On your mobile app, I don't think you do. I think what you've got is you've got three tiers of blocking, and the first tier is no blocking. And then I think you have a moderate blocking, and then you have strict blocking. But you do have rules in Outlook, the Office app, for your laptop. You have rules, definitely.
Well, that would apply to
no.
this, I would think.
They've changed it.
They don't sync.
They've made the two things different. And actually, Google, I don't think, does rules. I think they've got the same kind of tiered blocking. You can suggest things for junk mail. But you can't go and set a rule saying every time this comes in, it's junk mail. You can't do that on Gmail.
But Gmail works really well.
It does.
You put a recipient into spam. I mean, into your spam account, and all the future ones go right in there.
Yeah, Gmail.
I get about 50 a day.
But you know, they also have the headers. They've got the promotions and the
right. Yes,
which that true. Works really good because you can go right in the promotions and start erasing all of those and keeping your percentage down because you don't.
Gmail also.
You get up to that percentage gets up pretty fast.
Really?
Gmail also has an algorithm that will determine which emails they think are important and copy those into a separate folder.
Oh, well, that's an Outlook thing now, too. I haven't looked at the Gmail version of it, but Outlook's got...
Well, I use both. I mean, they combine them.
Yeah.
What does Outlook have?
It's got the ability to... it's similar to tabbed browsing, where it is said... it's called a focused inbox. And so it focuses things that are all related into one set of emails, and then things that are that seem unrelatable, like these one-offs, are in an other section. So you've got your focused inbox, which is all your correspondence, the things you're doing daily, the things that are all related to each other, and then you have this other spot called, I think it's called Other, where it's these one-offs. It might be where you'd find a sales promotion for Amazon, or you might find something out of the blue that I don't know. I deal with bed and breakfast guests, so I might have just something come in from a bed and breakfast guest.
Where's that
that I haven't started a conversation with yet. But what it really is this artificial intelligence. It's this really low budget artificial intelligence that's trying to help you keep your email organized so you don't have to. So it's trying to make those decisions for you.
And how do you keep the focus always there? Sometimes I see the focus, sometimes I see the other.
Yeah.
And I don't always see both.
Yeah, you never see both, actually. I think you have to choose which view you want.
Well, you have to have a heading.
Right.
There's no heading.
If there's no heading, I don't believe there's anything that would fall under that heading. I think everything should be in your inbox at that point. And it does seem like Gmail's doing that with like social, aren't they? They're separating into tabs that, for example, if you're on Twitter, you're on Facebook, you're on LinkedIn, Gmail will look at those things, wrap them together, and put them under a heading of social. So that's all your social emails.
That copy still there. The original is still on all under the heading of all mail. Everything is still there.
Everything under all mail is all mail.
And all mail is where you have to delete. Remember?
Huh. Okay.
Judy?
All mail.
When you're deleting, you have to go into all mail to delete everything. You can't delete.
Is that from iOS mail or from Mac mail?
Gmail.
But are you accessing it through a web browser and you have to go to all mail to delete it?
And you have to do it on your computer.
Do you have to do one at a time?
No.
That seems odd.
But the best is to go
remember?
All the way to the end.
Wait, is this the distinction between deleting and archiving?
No.
What I do is I will put the name in search. Like I want to get rid of all the emails from the Yacht Club just to clean things up. I will put Yacht Club in search and then delete them all at one time.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about all this and I'm realizing that there is a whole slew of new Gmail features that have been refined that are just rolling out right now. And I should come in ready to talk about those. So I'm going to put a note here.
That'd be nice.
So you just go in the search and search Yacht Club, and then they all come up.
Yeah.
But then everything comes up that has the name Yacht Club in it.
Well, that's true, too.
Because I noticed that, because I was searching for somebody's mail, and I put in a certain thing.
No, you have to be prepared.
And then I got mail from other people that mentioned that name.
You have to be prepared that. If you have other emails with yachts, yeah.
But when Judy and I were looking how to erase emails totally, you have to go in your computer.
Into Gmail.
And go to Gmail and go to all mail. Then go to the very last page. 67,000 emails. Go to the last page and start erasing page by page. And it won't let you do too many. Because they go into the trash, and then you have to get them out of the.
You have to erase them from the trash. That's interesting.
Right.
Well, I would think that you could do that from an IMAP client. You could just go and tag them to be deleted. The one thing that I do know is an issue with Gmail on the phones is that, or on iDevices, is that when you delete. There's this thing called archiving, right? You have the choice in your Gmail account of whether you're going to archive that, which means pull it out of the inbox and stick it in an archive that still takes up your space, versus putting it in the trash. And when you configure an iDevice, you have to choose what a delete means from the mail program, whether it means archiving or whether it means deleting, flagging it for deleting.
Mean?
Well, archiving means it's pulled out of your inbox. And that's the reason that you have to go into all mail to find it. Yeah, it goes into a...
stays there.
Yeah.
It stays there.
See, in Gmail's really pushed this change in paradigm. There are no folders. They finally relented and made up these fictitious folders. Everything in Gmail is tags. And so you're like meta tags. And so when you look at a trash can in email, what you're really looking at is you're looking at all your email that has a trash can flag on it. Mm-hmm. It's not physically located in a separate folder. And this is hard to understand because they've worked really hard, because people had a lot of trouble with this concept. They've worked really hard to make everything appear as though it's in folders. Outlook is different. Outlook started out with folders. Those are physical folders, the physical storage containers that are being used. Gmail doesn't use any of that stuff. Everything is a tag in Gmail.
Okay, let me comment if I may. When I take spam and I'll have, say, 500 of them,
mm-hmm.
and I will delete them a page at a time, they're not just deleted, they're deleted forever.
Yes.
Okay, then in my delete account, when I delete emails
right.
that I no longer want to keep, I think every 30 days it's all dumped.
That's right, with the trash can.
So the trash does get dumped. It doesn't stay
yep.
there forever.
That's right.
Unless you have it set to not ever
yeah, but
do
I don't. So
but
well, and if you've collected
somebody,
enough.
They'll be able to go in there and get those emails.
That's right.
I don't think they can get them.
I got to clean up my trash. Hold on.
I think they can
what?
Get them from Gmail, not me. Not in my computer.
Well, actually, you know, they've got it Gmail now. They've got promotions and what's the other one it called? You can actually go in. I've gone into the
yep.
promotions and deleted all those promotions.
Yeah. So promotions is the latest
exactly.
way of dealing with junk mail.
Junk.
Is any yeah anything that's considered legitimate commerce
yeah.
that you're getting emails on gets ferreted over and it gets tagged as promotions, and then their visual representation is a tabbed browsing, and you go over there and see all the promotional emails that it's come up, just
you
like the social.
How yeah. much percentage your box keeps getting
I set mine up so all those go into spam.
That would be interesting. Can you, if you could just hit the promotionals tab and say everything that comes here is junk mail. Go ahead, Mike.
I've been using folders for years.
Yeah.
I have one for St. Carlos and one for utilities.
Yeah, me too.
Well, you're saying that they're not folders?
They, in Gmail, they're not folders. In
no,
Gmail's, they're
Gmail.
Yeah. Gmail, it gets tagged.
They look, like folders,
they look exactly like folders.
Yeah.
But the whole paradigm stems out of this tagging. And I remember when they brought folders to Gmail. What it is literally is it is a tag that's folder name, but it's not an actual folder. It's just tagged right on the email, and when the Gmail client sees that, then it puts up this visual representation of a folder. But they don't use folder storage containers.
The folders I set up are in Outlook.
Yeah, that's right. Your Yacht Club folder, is it in Outlook or Gmail?
No, for example, let's say I'm buying something on the internet.
Oh.
I have a folder on Outlook called Transactions. And so I move all of those in Outlook, I move them into that folder. So in the future, I can go in there and see if they've been delivered,
right.
and then I delete them. And then after they get deleted then in Gmail, and every month they get dumped.
Yes.
I think in developing a topic, what you ought to do is start with the basics of like POP3 versus IMAP, where the things are stored.
I think that's
and then
true.
Break it down into like...
Yeah, oh, you're talking about if I bring in these new features?
Topics to start separating at the top, because there's a real... advantages, pros and cons of each method, and then talk about you know how you access it with which email client and the differences there too.
Oh my gosh, don't make me do all that work.
Oh.
I can barely get the equipment set up when I show up.
I think there's so much confusion in there.
Yeah. I wonder if this is the topics we want to, because a lot of this is just stuff that regurgitation of stuff we've covered in the past too.
It's very hard to get back to anything in the past. You know, you're not going to go listen to every comment that's happened.
Yeah. Well, I do know that Gmail has just released a whole slew of new features,
mm-hmm.
and so I'll bring in a list of those that we can go through.
I have a question for Bob.
Wake up, Bob.
Which email do you have?
Outlook.
So I think the new paradigm in Outlook Online is the same paradigm that Gmail is using. It's taken all the controls out of your hands, and all it's given you is turn on junk mail, turn on medium junk mail, turn on extreme Gmail. or extreme junk mail. So either turn off the filtering, you turn on the filtering moderately, or you turn it on extremely. And when you have it extremely turned on, there's a good chance that things that matter to you may end up in junk mail. So you have to know that and check your junk mail from time to time to make sure you haven't missed anything.
So how do you go to settings to do that?
You would log in to your Outlook.com account, and you would go into the email settings, and there is a junk mail setting right there. And it's got these three radio buttons: turn on moderately, turn on severely.
And if you have folders, are folders ever deleted?
Well, you can delete them on Outlook. There's so little. There's a thin line between the way Google does and the, because your experience is the same. You have a folder presented to you, and it doesn't matter whether that's an actual storage container or not. You deal with it like it's a folder. So on Gmail, even though they don't actually have folders, you still deal with it like it's a folder, because that's the paradigm that people are accustomed to. That's the whole reason they brought folders back.
So I think folder, you could choose.
If I have a folder called transaction,
yeah,
does that sit there forever?
I don't have that in Gmail. I have that in Outlook.
But
there's no reason for it to disappear.
There with thousands and thousands of things.
There's no reason for it to disappear unless you've deleted it or they've had some technical problem. That folder should still be there.
That's the nice thing about Outlook.
Yeah.
You can also set it just to get emails from your contacts, and everybody else goes into spam.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. Yeah,
that's the easiest way to get rid of.
That's very similar to the telephone blocking. It's like, I only want Mexico and America. I don't want any other phone calls from me. I only want emails from people that are in my contact list. Everything else is considered bad. Is there a function for blocking by domain? In Outlook.com?
I don't know.
Yeah. I looked at it recently and I felt like it wasn't very robust. They were making all the decisions for you with junk mail. It would be interesting to look into.
Well, maybe what we should do, I have a 32-inch TV that I don't use, that I take with me.
Okay.
Maybe I could bring it. We could
go through emails.
Bring up and some things that we could put on the TV so everybody could see it.
Sure. I'd be into that. Cool. That would be cool. Yeah. Let's you and me coordinate on a good day to do that, and we'll come up with an idea for how to present email.
I think the visual is a lot easier for people to see than having to think it in your mind about what it looks like. And we could just
you wouldn't mind bringing a 32-inch TV in with you?
No.
Okay.
It doesn't weigh anything.
Yeah.
Speaking That's of that, my friend was coming across country, and she found out while they're driving, whatever, that in Facebook, that a lot of her old Facebook friends had been deleted or blocked out, and there was a way for her to get them back. And so she was finding her old friends, you know, online. They only allow so many to filter through, and it's the ones that you generally say like, that you like something of theirs, and so they'll keep sending them.
But you're talking about the timeline. You're talking about getting the posts from people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's already set up some kind of filtering, so you're missing all those other posts.
That's why you don't see them, and you go to somebody, then you go to their name, and you see all these emails, you're going, mm-hmm. I mean, all these Facebook posts, and you're going, well, I didn't get those.
Yeah,
yep.
Facebook is limiting them.
That's right. And you have this experience where maybe I've got a couple of friends that always post interesting stuff, and I'm always like. Yeah. Well, after a while, that's all you're seeing is that stuff.
Exactly.
And you're missing all your friends and family, all this other stuff that's coming by.
Yeah, so how do you get around that?
Well, that's another good topic. I haven't I've actually pulled so far away from Facebook that I haven't even bothered to invest in it. But we can find out, because that is a hot topic right now.
Yeah.
Is how to democratize your feed.
We can watch you online.
Can I make one more comment about Microsoft Outlook?
Sure.
For years, I loved Outlook 2007, you know, Office 2007 and the Outlook program. I was used to it. I loved it. And it quit working. and I was forced to go to Outlook 365 mm-hmm. or Microsoft 365. Office 365. Yeah, and once I got used to it, I love it.
It's fun.
But yeah. It is more complicated, but it is just really nice.
Well, there is stuff that's much easier to use in it too. And I mean, like the what really impressed me was the PowerPoint that I did the smartphones.
Yeah.
That was just amazingly. I mean, I couldn't help but preach the benefits of that program. It was teaching me how to build the presentation as I would reach looking for something that I knew I could do, and all of a sudden it knew that I wanted to do it and showed me how to do it. Yeah, like it was reading my mind, which is where we're going with all this anyway, right?
I'm reading a book right now about AI.
Hey,
it's scary.
Yeah, the AI stuff is
very scary.
Yeah, get ready for machines to be smarter than you. It's coming.
And rapidly smarter.
Yeah, exponentially smarter.
Exactly.
Every month, every year, getting exponentially smarter.
Every second.
Yeah, I thought it was just the kids that were smarter.
This is a scary book, actually.
What's the name of the book?
I can't remember. It's by Rollins.
Yeah, you're responsible for bringing that name in now.
The machine knows. This machine's not...
Join the group.
If anybody's interested, my topic I brought in was there's rumors that they might be shutting down the metadata collection system left over from the 9/11, the system that was set up by the NSA to collect everybody's metadata from their phones. There isn't an official word. Everything that they've written. There's been a article in the Times, in the New York Times, and the Journal. I assume that's the Wall Street Journal, talking about how this is informal and unofficial. But they are having their first talks about shutting this whole program down, and it's been mostly being discussed. Because of what happened in 2015 when they changed the Patriot Act and told the NSA they could no longer arbitrarily collect everybody's data. This was shut down 2 years after Snowden had made us aware of this collection of data that was happening, and it was determined to be unconstitutional. And so in 2016 they changed the Patriot Act to make sure that the only data, metadata that can be gotten a hold of by the NSA. I know, I'm watching your face. I know, they've got the data. They've got it. There's no doubt in my mind they've got it. But this is the official word on it, is that program has been falling apart since 2015 because of the requirements, the stipulations on collecting data required them to go to the phone operators and specify the subjects that they were interested in. They could no longer just have a funnel of information into the NSA of everybody. This is the domestic surveillance program that you heard so much about. This is a real thing that had been going on. We'd known about it in 2006, and we required 7 years of education before anyone really understood what that meant. It required Snowden coming out and making us all aware of what this meant. And it took two more years for it to be isolated to only a judge could order the surveillance of a U.S. citizen. And so the NSA had to go to a judge, get an order. They had to give that to the telecom operators, and that was the only thing that allowed them to start collecting that information. I bring this up because, to me, what they've described, this is what we need to be concerned with. We need to be educated in these areas and understand that the regulation we're interested in is protecting our own privacy, the use of our information. The collection of your information is going to happen. Technically, there's no way for that not to happen. But we can set the rules on what we consider to be appropriate use of our information. And when we find violations in those rules, we can hold companies and governments accountable for them. And what has happened is that the NSA's database has gotten corrupted because they have been handed incorrect information, or downright the wrong information has gotten stuck in their database. So they've inadvertently collected other people's information, or they've collected other people's information under the name of somebody else's information. And because it is not to the warrant, it's gotten garbled up in their system, and they had to take extreme measures recently, and they just purged their whole database, so they say. And every time they've gone back to trying to do things following the rules that were set in place, so they say, they end up with inaccurate information. And so there's right now whispers going on that they're just going to eliminate the whole program because it cannot comply with what was legally put together under the changes that were made to the Patriot Act.
Well, it's one thing for a company to collect information, but it's certainly something else for the government.
Well, and the other thing is that this doesn't address, this only addresses the government collection of information. This does not address, like, the location information we were talking about that was for sale, that your phone is spitting out every time you bring your phone around. That information is getting collected. It's being put into a third-party market where it's being sold to marketers. The corporations all still have the Patriot Act, and the changes they made was to protect you from government surveillance.
Right.
But it does nothing to protect you from corporate surveillance. And again, this information, you can't stop it. Outside of a complete de-evolution of our society, like nuclear war, this is where we're going. All your information is getting collected by these gadgets. It's out there. We need to start thinking about how we're going to protect the way that information is used, because it's out there.
Yeah, but it's just like if you go Google any of your friend, or put in your friend's name, it brings up their address, their phone number, everything.
Sure. Well, Facebook is in trouble right now because it turns out that that phone number that you put in for second factor authentication got mixed in with their databases, and they discovered that people were able to find people by phone number. So you're able to go into Facebook, and I didn't read all the details, but in the end, somebody like me could go into Facebook and type in somebody's phone number and find out who it belonged to. The whole reason that Facebook has the phone number in the first place, I mean, this is your worst fear. Imagine, this is, they asked you for the phone number because it was only going to be used for security purposes. That phone number, the whole idea when they asked you for it was, you're going to put in your password, we're not going to trust you, we're going to send a text message to your phone, that's going to give you an authorization code, that's the way we're going to know it's you, this is going to be the most secure you've ever been on Facebook. That phone number's gotten mixed in with all your data.
But it's not just Facebook that does that.
No. Well, right, but the Facebook problem is, like, the Google does that as well. Mm-hmm. Google has kept that phone number separate other people on Facebook.
Can go into Dex Knows and type in a phone number in it.
But that's a different deal.
Yeah.
That's a different deal.
It's the same thing.
But no, it's not, because what Google has done is it's indexed phone books, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So you can go to Google. The end result is the same. Who's responsible for it is different. In regards to Facebook, they asked you for that phone number for security purposes, and then they attached it to your public information.
But don't you think that's naive of you and I to think?
They also did not create a way for you to remove that from your public information.
I can't?
You can't.
Are you sure?
Well, in the last week it may have changed. Hmm. But there was no place to remove that phone number.
Can you change that phone number?
Again, this is not your public phone number. This is the phone number you provided Facebook with to do two-factor authentication.
It is your public
number. But the public phone number is the one you put on your Facebook profile. Mm-hmm. That one you can change. That one you can change it to whatever your current phone number is. You can have office phone numbers.
But if they're going to authenticate and send me a text to authenticate, it has to be my actual phone number. Can't I go in
it
and
does,
change that?
But it doesn't have to be the phone number that anyone can find. And that's what they've done wrong. is they've taken, like maybe you're somebody who wants to have the most secure experience. You don't want anybody else getting into your Facebook page. So you do two-factor authentication. So even if they've got your password, they don't have your phone. Mm-hmm. And so you can authorize it with a code. So they took that phone number and made that phone number public. You understand the distinction,
do.
Right?
Well,
the other phone number you're making public. Mm-hmm. In your security scenario, you intentionally left your phone number off of your
right.
Facebook account so no one would find it. And they found it anyway because Facebook said, oh, here's the one we used for two-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. You see the distinction,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
This is where they're in a lot of trouble right now. Is that, and they keep getting caught doing stuff like this. And I think
they're all doing it, though. All you have to do is Google your friend's name and find her.
Again, this was Linda's point.
Mm-hmm.
This is Judy's point. Linda's point is Judy's point, and I
right.
agree with you. The end result is the
this
same.
Is the Absolutely.
Is the same result. The difference is who's responsible for it. And Facebook can be held responsible for it because this was not the intention of the phone number. Whereas the phone books that are public record are allowed to be indexed by Google. Google has done nothing wrong. You should have kept your phone number out of those phone books if that was your concern.
Can you keeping it out? Just go to any one of those, you know, those lookup things where you can find people by their age or where they live. And up pops your, just
mm-hmm.
go in there, and up pops your age, your address, your phone number, birthday.
The reason we can rant about this is because there's no regulation about this. The reason that Facebook's in trouble is because they lied to you, not because they broke any rules. I mean, they didn't break any laws. They lied to you. They got you to put in your phone number for two-factor authentication and then allowed it to get into your public information. That's the reason they're in trouble. If they had told you that's how it was going to be used, it would be okay.
That's apparently only one thing they've done. They've done other.
Yeah. They keep getting caught making these poor decisions. We need a set of regulations that requires these businesses to model out how the release of this information could be misused. We need to hold them accountable for this stuff.
Yeah, but every single account
right.
now is making you have
right.
two-factor
exactly.
authentication. It doesn't matter.
Well, and to be clear, I'm not saying that this is happening everywhere there's two-factor authentication. You can make that assumption, but I'm assuming that this is incompetence on Facebook's part. They're happy to have it all linked together until they get caught. But if they'd have a forward-thinking person, they would realize they would get in trouble if this were ever to get out. And I think that's what Google does. There's no doubt in my mind your two-factor phone number is associated with your information. Google's just smart enough to keep it out of the public eye.
How many people use Facebook in this room?
Yeah, probably.
I
try not to, but yeah.
Most of us.
Yeah.
Once you're in there, you can never get out of it.
Yeah.
That's what I found out.
You
die,
you have to use
yes.
Facebook.
That's right. If you if you got a digital frame that's wireless from your grandkids that's hooked up, you've got Facebook that allows you to see the latest pictures in it.
Get the photos.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's,
do you know that on Facebook, if you die, your heirs, if you want your Facebook off of there, they have to produce a death certificate to Google.
No.
Or you wait to Facebook, yeah.
In order to get you off of there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're on there. And if you just sign out of Facebook, you're still on there.
You know, that's not an uncommon practice. It's actually the most secure practice you can think of, to be able to deal with that stuff. You know that if you have say your spouse passes away and you want to use their iPhone and you don't know their code, you have to get a death certificate to an Apple representative to get them to unlock that phone, or it's a useless piece of device. It can't be used for a phone anymore. Because they've got such great security on it, it's just locked down until you've got the password.
Uh-huh.
I don't have a problem with the death certificate thing. I don't think that you're ever off of Facebook, though. When you start collecting personal data in those databases, all you do is if you get off of it, all you do is lose your access to that information. They've still got that access.
Well, because my sister found out she wanted to get off Facebook, mm-hmm. but still use Messenger. Well, you
right.
can't.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually.
Well, I told her, I said, you know what? Just sign out of Facebook and don't go in there and only use the Messenger app.
Actually, you can delete your Facebook account. You can do that.
Yeah.
And you can use Messenger because it's associated with your phone number, but it has to be set up as a different account.
She tried that.
Yeah, it's not.
So we're using WhatsApp now anyway, so.
Sure.
Pretty soon it's all going to be together. So now you'll have to see what they're going to do.
It's all the same company. They don't care if you use WhatsApp
yeah,
or not.
Right.
Yeah. I bring this up because I thought it was interesting that they were starting talks about this. I thought it was a great reminder of how we don't have enough regulation protecting our personal information. It's a reminder that our personal information is always out there. We're not trying to block it anymore. We're trying to block the way it gets used.
Yeah, the main thing is to block the government.
And Chester says the government's more dangerous than the corporations.
But the regulation that's going to come forward is going to be determined by old men that don't understand the internet anyway.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's definitely been where we're at, right? That's the reason we don't have any regulation right now. Nobody understands what we're talking about.
But that's a good topic because I just read yesterday about jobs and upcoming jobs for people.
Oh, yeah?
The language in the job.
Nope, it's fine.
They had a job interview on Post-it, so I read it.
See you next week.
Okay. First of all the terminology, I didn't understand any of it. Not one thing in this interview.
Really? You mean like all the requirements for the job? The job description?
There was names of things. And in order to get anywhere now, if you are not educated and have a $100,000 job, you aren't going to be nowhere. You are going to be dead poor. And you're not going to get anywhere because the language and the terminology to get a job now is so high. I wish I could find that article again. I'd bring it because the language in it was, I had no idea what any of the stuff was they were talking about.
Well, you know, we started out this meeting, we were talking about my children and their education and the way there's a more of a re-emphasis on being able to be critical thinkers and dynamic thinkers because things change so quickly. And it's important to remember that 50 years ago, we couldn't imagine the jobs we're doing now.
Well, listen to the language.
We have social media experts, right? We got people out there that get paid good money to make sure that their product looks good on Twitter.
Well, I think
that's their whole job.
In education today, it seems to be moving back towards the Socratic method.
Yeah?
Socratic method. Instead of where you have somebody just telling you all the time what to do and how to do it.
The knowledge is in knowing I know nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even the stuff your girls are talking about,
mm-hmm.
it's way over our heads.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's good.
It may not be that far away though. I mean,
the job interview I saw online, was way over my head.
Yeah.
I didn't know the terminology they were talking about. I didn't know the answer. Like they gave some questions.
Right.
The answers were so out there.
I'd be interested in looking at it.
Yeah.
Just to see what it is.
What job interview is she talking about?
Yeah,
you're reading an article that
I
had
it. I was reading this article about the average income now. The average income is about $108,000. And if you can't meet that,
Well, this must be for Silicon Valley jobs or tech jobs.
It was actually in Seattle.
Okay.
So they are Silicon Valley type jobs.
Okay.
But they weren't just talking about Seattle. They were talking about if you aren't getting a job, you aren't educating yourself, and you're not going to have a job that pays around $108,000 a year, you're going to be poor. So if you're not going to go get yourself educated, and you think you're just going to get to a high school education, you have something else coming to you, because you're not going to be able to earn an income that's going to allow you to even purchase a house.
Yeah, I'd be interested in seeing the article. It sounds like a bit of fear-mongering.
Yeah,
I mean, really, we've moved into a time period where so much of our education is digitally based that people don't know how to fix a toilet. I mean, I sure don't. Or welding or concrete work or I mean, we're quickly moving into an area where tradesmen are going to be making more money than they've ever made before because there's so few of them. So I think we're going to have a lot of different opportunities, but the point is they're different. They're what you're describing. It may appear to me the same way it's appearing to you, because I've always worked in those kinds of jobs.
But the person who made $45,000 or $50,000, you're going to be poor.
But the plumber isn't going to be poor, because we need plumbers and we need people that can build houses and we need people that can fix roads. And those things we haven't figured out how to digitalize. Whereas a lot of the jobs I've held so many jobs in IT that are not the same anymore. They've been taken care of. They've been automated away. So it's not hard for me to imagine in our scope of work, there is jobs out there that you can't even identify, can't even, like the social media network, I am expert.
Right. The terms and the way they talk, like in the interview, I was reading it, it was way over my head, even though some of it probably was really simple. But they've got it so wordy and way over your head, way over the top about what you can do.
Jargon, a lot of jargon.
Yeah. Well, keep in mind, we are living in a world where everybody wants to solve their problems by pushing a button on a phone. So no matter what vocabulary is being used, nobody wants it to be any harder than that. Right? keep that in mind. It may sound technical, but in the end, everybody wants it to be as easy as pressing a button on their phone. And with that, we should close this up, because we are over, again, like always. We're into the ish of 10:15.
It's
the ish.
It's almost on the verge.
That's right.
Anyway, I can fix a toilet.
Good for you. I will call you.
I can install a toilet.
Oh, hey, that's impressive. I'm very impressed by the folks that can do that stuff. I've always been disappointed with the people that look around and think the Mexicans are so lazy. It's like, have you ever seen them build a house?
You ever seen them throwing those red bricks?
Right? Yeah, lazy is the last word I would ever use to describe these people.
I would describe them as
I'm in trouble
happy.
Again, Scott.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I can't get online. And I don't know if I can give you a computer and
Do you have it right here?
Yep.
Do you want to open it up and we'll just take a quick look at it? And I will shut this down. This has been the San Carlos Computer Club. Once again, I'm Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions. And if you enjoyed this or others and are interested in recordings like this, I would suggest check out our website at sccclub.org. We also publish a podcast on iTunes or anywhere you get podcasts. Just search for the San Carlos Computer Club. If you're looking for computer help anywhere on the internet, I'd appreciate it if you get a hold of me at scott@internationalcs.net or call our offices at country code 52, area code 622, phone number 226-0209, and we'll get with you. Until next week, good talking to you, and I'll talk to you Tuesday at 9:15. Oh, from Tequila. We're in Tequila's. I forgot to say, we meet in Tequila's every Tuesday. Until then, keep calm, tech on. I'll see you then. And that's done. Hi. Phil.
Uh-huh.
How are you doing? What'd you think?
Oh, fun.
You had fun?
Yeah.
All right.
Sometimes, you know, you need a little more structure, perhaps, and you start wandering.